I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on Armoring Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The one and only Ray Charles. Have you ever seen? Hey, Gunner, you seen a movie?
Oh, I thought you were doing me.
Have you seen the? Did you see the movie Ray?
Yeah, that came out a long time ago.
Yeah.
Fox.
Yeah. If you've never seen it, watch it. It's a good movie.
You know what's another good movie I watched yesterday, and it's all in the subtitles, and I didn't know it was such a good movie.
What?
Life is Beautiful.
Life is, by who's in that?
I mean, not a huge budget, and it was an Italian movie. And when I read about it after I watched it, I'm like, holy crap! This thing was nominated in 1998 for 7 Academy Awards, winning 3 Oscars, including one for Best Actor, Roberto Benigni.
Oh,
Benigni.
You're right. Right.
But that movie, man, was a really good. It just, what a wholehearted, like, man, you know, the dad being so imaginative, trying to shield it. And it took place during World War II. They're Italian. He's a Jew. He falls in love with the girl that's already engaged to another guy. Wins her heart. The way he does it is amazing. And then the Germans come in and occupy it. They go off to a concentration camp. The wife learns that they're on the same trend, that they've taken their son and her husband. And she demands to the German guards that I must be on my train. They tell her to get lost. She doesn't. They put her on the train. So she goes to the concentration camp. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends, because if you watch it, it's a really good, like, wow, how come I never saw this thing advertised, because I would have went to the movies and watched it. Amazing. Probably,
yeah,
Max, I'll tell you, one of the best movies I've seen all year.
Whoa. You haven't seen very many good movies this year, though. I will say that.
I mean, I saw a lot of ones that, you know, like the new
right.
Tom Cruise, you know, the Mission Impossible, you know, the predictable shit.
Right.
I'm going to go see, my daughter wants to go see the movie that's just coming out tomorrow. I forget the hell of the name of it, but it deals with something.
It deals with something, and Megan wants to go, so we're going.
Yeah. It's called, it's something like, not Valkyrie, because that movie already came out, but something
No. Let me just tell you, I want to go see that. It's about the Israelis yoking up, who is it, Martin Bormann, down in where, Argentina or Latin America?
Argentina.
Yeah, it's about that.
The true story behind it.
Yeah.
What's it called, though?
I want to say Valkyrie, but you're, hold on.
No, it's not Valkyrie, because Valkyrie was the plot to kill Hitler. They would name it after a German failed plot.
No, it's Adolf Eichmann. Martin Bormann's a different guy.
Yeah, Eichmann, the butcher at the doctor at a.
Now that's that's Mengele. What's the?
Oh yeah, Mengele is the doctor at
Operation Finale. Finale.
Finale. It's a true story.
Right. Right,
so she went to go see that, which I'm like,
Yeah, I'll go to that. Yeah, I go see all these other lame-ass movies. I'd love to go see a movie about history. Yeah, that was pretty... I want to say, is that the first major event when the whole world looked and said, what's the name of that Israeli intelligence service? Mossad?
Yeah, that's when it came...
Mossad.
That's when they came into their own Mossad.
What do you call those guys? Oh, you'll learn it. Mossad. Hello.
So they went after a bunch of people. There's, you know, the whole Munich thing is after them. The Munich killings in the Olympics. after that when they killed the Israeli delegates to the Olympics.
Right.
Mossad went out, man. They got even, dude. Oh, my God, did they get even.
Well, yeah, you know, it's the Israeli concept of retribution is not an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
It's your body for my finger.
Yeah.
And the body of your constituent.
Right. They don't play that game.
Yeah, I take your life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again,
I was at commissioner court today, man.
What's that?
I was at commissioner court today.
Oh, so, and what happened?
I got angry. I didn't voice, but I'm starting to see this. I'm not going to mention names. What really kind of disgusted me was the fact that there's one guy in the commissioner's court who's, I believe he's truly one of the most unprofessional people I've ever come across.
Okay,
he actually got into an argument.
Wait, before you talk about that, can you explain to everybody what commissioner court is?
Okay, so the county's run is budgeted and basically run by five governing bodies. We all live in that the county's cut into four precincts. Precinct 1, 2, 3, and 4. I live in precinct 3. And the head of the commissioners, is the district judge, which December 31st at stroke of midnight is going to be Ron Massengill. But, so that they're the five governing bodies. They determine how the money is spent within the community or the county. Which affects us all.
Okay.
And I was really kind of displeased. One, and there's a lot of friends there. You know, the sheriff was there, the fire marshal, the county clerk, who's one of my neighbors. She's a great lady. We were all talking. And I asked the question again, where's the connection to the city and the county and the government? And they're like laughing at me like, there isn't any. And it was such a disparity. I mean, it's so, you know, here as a constituent, as a taxpayer, as a person that's being represented by people that don't have in my interest, you know, my interest, meaning I want to better the city, better the county. I want it better as a whole, as the people. You know, so I asked that, they're looking at me like, no. And I told them. And Katie's husband, who is a former cop, now he's our state representative here in our district. He retired from the police department, and he got involved in politics because, kind of like me, you start to see it, and he starts getting upset, and he knows he can do better, and he does. He runs for office here locally, does a great job, and then sees on a bigger scale that he can do better, runs for congressional office and wins, and does. And he's doing great things as our congressman, our state representative.
Right.
And like he warned me, he said, Mike, be careful because you're going to go down a path, because you're kind of like me. We're people that we see clearly the problems and we can cut through the bureaucracy and the administration bullshit and just solve the problem. And you're going to get in a situation where you're going to end up running for office because you're going to, just like me, believe that you can do better, you know, for the people. And today was kind of that day. It was like, damn, man, if today would have been the day I would have announced my running for an office.
So do you want to make an announcement?
Not yet. But, you know, it's just this, I hate seeing things squandered. And meaning, I'm not talking about a material thing. What's being squandered is the trust and the confidence that we instill in our government officials. And, you know, I saw that today as one of the commissioners erupted in a tirade of immature badgering and, you know, placing the blame on other commissioners. It was just bad. And finally the judge stepped in, you know, in commissioner court and said, stop. Everybody just stop. I mean, it was like, what is going on? You know, I was disgusted that I was part of the group of people that defend the Constitution for people that practice that kind of government. You know, like, this is not what we give or put our lives on the line for. We deserve better. And, you know, the people deserve better because they go on their daily life believing that they're being represented fairly and professionally. And, for the most part, they are. And in some cases, they're not. And we need to get people in there that have that kind of focused lens, that laser focus to solve problems instead of blaming and being an immature brat when you don't get your way. I mean, it's just, it's disgusting to see, you know, county politics. And I could, you know, I imagine on the grand scale of the nation what it looks like, but, you know, it's just, again, it goes back to what we've talked about in the past. We as the people really need to get back what we deserve, and we deserve better. And, you know, that's going to be kind of my slogan is, I will be that better. I will first and foremost put your interest in front of everything. You know, it's just a mind boggling experience.
Do you think you could do that and not physically assault somebody?
It's going to be very hard. Yeah.
And I say that in all sincerity. That's to me, when somebody looks you straight in the face and they're lying and they're doing what Ray Mabus did to the Marine Corps, all the work that all the Marines put into the ground combat integration study that did not confirm what Mabus was going to say or what he stood for. It gets assassinated by lies before it sees the light of day. When people do that, do you think you could actually restrain yourself enough not to physically?
Yeah, I think I can. What would be really hard is, you know, I will never tolerate anybody talking down to me.
No.
Or trying to school me.
How about when they do it, Mike? How about when they do it in public, right? Because that's what politics
is.
Okay, you might want to rethink your.
I know that's what's tough, difficult, Mac. I'm trying to get my arms around that.
I know.
I mean, how would I go about? Because if you assault my character, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, that's not going to work out very good.
If you speak for me, I'm going to punch you in the face. Because that's the way they only learn. They don't learn because they're bullies, man. Bullies need to be punched. Bullies need to feel the repercussions of their actions by pain.
Okay.
They don't understand reasoning. They don't understand, you know, grown-up talk. What they understand is being a bigger bully.
Okay, I completely understand it. And you and I have had this discussion, this specific discussion in private, about when Mike got involved in a political campaign, but he has ran for... No, what do they call that office that he ran for, Mike?
Who, my buddy?
Yep. Right.
District, county judge.
County judge. All right. So, and I said, hey, I just want to warn you, man, local politics is brutal. And so then Mike's tracking down some dude that's trash talking, that's lying about his friend. Mike's talking him down.
Don't fabricate lies about my friends
on the internet. But
I will confront. I will confront you.
Okay, I want you to do me a favor though today, and I don't often ask you favors. I'll send you a link. Watch John McCain's last speech on the floor of the Senate. And it's a great speech. I mean, we talked yesterday. Talk about a guy who lived just an incredible life. First of all, he crashed two aircraft. Before he went to combat, he tried to fly under the wire, and I guess he wasn't the greatest pilot. He tried to fly under the wires of power lines in Italy, clipped the wires, knocked out power to, you know, these communities, and he still kept his wings, right? Now, that may be because his dad was pretty high, an admiral at the time. He goes to combat, he survives a forestall fire, he's in an aircraft that gets hit by the Zuni rocket. He survives getting shot down. He survives being a POW. That's like six right there. And then he lives this incredible life as a U.S. senator, as the Republican nominee for president. He stands on the floor of the Senate, right, with every senator that's elected there. So there's 100 of them there, which doesn't ever happen. And he talks to them. And I'm going to send you the link for it. The sad part about where we are, where politicians are, is that that guy is speaking the truth because he's facing death. and he knows it. And he speaks the truth to his colleagues, and they will ignore just about every bit of it. Because that's the way politics are in this country today. And the reason is politicians cater to what we see on the 5 o'clock news. That Jerry Springer shit. And it just, it makes it, I watched it and I listened to it today. Disgusting. And that's what you're talking about. The anger that you feel by watching that process in motion. And we talked about what changes it. Frustrating. Frustrating, frustrating. So, anywho.
Yeah.
We were supposed to talk about deer rifles today.
Okay.
No, we don't have to. We don't have to.
Go ahead.
No.
Well, no, I mean, deer rifles, you're shooting a 160-pound animal, you know, and it's like, what should I shoot them with? A gun that'll kill them.
Don't turn gun talk and deer talk into a four-minute discussion. Okay. I can see where this is going. Yeah. What kind of ammunition? What do you need to bring down? Do I have to draw you a picture of it? Figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you're shooting a deer. We're not trying to put a man on the moon, guys. This is not rocket science.
This is so not the way this is supposed to go. Oh, my God.
Like I said, most people that I deal with when they deer hunt, they shoot from a stand. They're shooting at deer that's been fed, so they know they're... They know their trails. They see the game trails. It's like, there's no challenge in this. You know, if you want to go shoot a deer, go use a bow and arrow.
Word.
Go shoot a recurve. Make your own arrows. Make your own bow.
Word. Go stalk the son of a bitch. That
yeah,
to me,
go stalk the son of a bitch.
That to me, that's to me hunting.
That's hunting.
That's
hunting. The other stuff's called killing.
Harvesting. That's how we dress that word up, harvesting. You're in a deer stand, right? And hopefully you haven't put any salt lick out, right? Because that's illegal in most states now. But I'm not going to say that guys don't do that, but it happens. And then you get your 14-point buck or whatever you're looking for. Let me ask you some nuanced questions about deer hunting. Owning the bullet. Right? When you shoot, you're in theory responsible for that round. Is part of pulling that trigger, Mike, some kind of visual reconnaissance on the limiting features that surround you? Where's this bullet gonna go? How far is it gonna go if I miss? Yada yada yada. Because when you mention that to a lot of deer hunters, they look at you and they say, "What? Oh, I'm just trying to kill the deer."
Yeah.
Big sky, little bullet, man. Big earth, little bullet. Not going to hit anything.
Yeah, you own it. You got it. It's the prelude to actually pulling the trigger is where that bullet is going to go. And, you know, dispatching the animal in a humane manner. Don't make them suffer. You know, be better. You know, go out there, practice. Know your craft. Again, I hear, you know, when people tell me stories of like, "Oh, I shot a deer and I don't know where it went." I'm like, "Oh."
Talk about that. I mean, how about the stories of people shooting another hunter? It's right along with that, right? Which goes when you're around. Mike grew up in Minnesota. I lived in North Dakota for 14 years. The people there are born with a rifle in one hand and a fishing reel in another. One of the biggest issues in election in North Dakota 10 years ago was being able to post your own land. It was the biggest political issue in the state, a hunting issue. Okay? And some of the biggest issues in Minnesota will be fishing issues. Right? And things like that. Mike talked about the art of hunting, right? To not know how to shoot an animal and not to put it out of its misery with the first shot, they spit on you up in that part of the country.
Yeah.
They look at you like you are the lowest form of life, and yet people do it, right? A deer that you don't bring down with your first shot and put it out of its misery in the way a humane hunter would?
Yeah, find a new hobby, boys.
Yeah, clearly this one is too much for you.
Yeah, too difficult.
Email. Mac, I was looking forward to Gun Talk. I'm curious about Gunner's thoughts about the whole concept of quote-unquote driving deer towards a shooter.
Just go find a place that sells venison and buy it. Save everybody the trouble.
I know you're going to go. I know you're going to make your...
You don't belong out there shooting animals if someone needs to drive deer to you. You don't. Go find something else to do with your time. That's not a sport. I don't know why they even think of it as, like, how they can even think of it being a sport, even close to being a sport. You know, find something else. Go play golf.
If it's not a sport, what would you call it?
I don't know. It is a sport. For some people that I know that do it, it is a sport because, you know, the degree of difficulty is pretty high. But these are the guys that I know that, again, they go stalk it. You know, like you said, when we were shooting elk in Hayden, Colorado, hell, we were taking them at 800, 900 yards. And, you know, so I tell some of that, you know, like some people, and they're like, yeah, right. I'm like, no, dude, seriously. Do you want me to go prove it to you? Go stand out at 900 yards and tell me when I hit you. You know, you can do it. It doesn't take much. It just takes, well, it does take, it takes practice. It takes time. You have to invest time into it to actually be that good. But, I mean, it, like I said, I don't get it. I don't look at it as a sport, in a lot of senses because, you know, especially these high fence places where the game is trapped in a fence, you know, like, come on. You show up, the guide knows exactly what animal because you paid X amount of dollars for a trophy animal and that trophy animal's sitting out here at this area. Let's go up to the hill and here's your clear shot. I put the shooting sticks up for you. I put the gun in there. I give you your windage and I give you your elevation and all you got to do is pull the trigger. And they still miss. You know, Ralph, my buddy, right. You know, he's, you know, 80 years old and he can go out and do what I just talked about. He stalks the animal, you know, and shoots it through open sights and drops it. First shot.
Ralph. Yeah, but you don't.
But like, I mean, he's been doing it his whole life.
Right. They're guys who were born into it, grew up. I mean, I will tell you what, one of the cool things that I experienced in baseball, I saw for the first time at Fenway Park in Boston. And that was this kind of pilgrimage that families would make to Fenway when, like, their grandson would be old enough to go to the ball game, that here would be the grandfather, the father, and the grandson, right, walking into Fenway Park, and the father and the grandfather looking at the son, the son and the grandson going, this is it, this is, you know, and you would see them, and it was like this. They were raised in this culture. This was a big part of their culture. And you'd see them walking up to their seats, and if you looked at the concrete is worn at Fenway from decades and generations of people that have gone into that ballpark. Same thing in Wrigley Field. It's a part. When you grow up with that, like Ralph has, right, it's not just a sport. It is a way of life. It is that you have a, you are a steward of that natural asset, and they are incredibly insulted, and I don't even know if insulted is a strong enough word when people
disgusted.
Yeah, disgusted, and the way you said it was the way you spit it out of your mouth was good. At people that abuse that, disgusted, absolutely.
Yeah, that
disgusted.
Relationship that you have with the animal, you're losing respect. You know, when you go out there and you have total disregard for the animal deserves better. You know, I look at some trophies on walls of people that I know, and I'm like, that animal was such a better creature than you had ever attained to be. It doesn't deserve to, one, to be killed by you, two, to be hanging on your wall. Because you don't have the respect of the animal. Because you don't respect the craft. You don't respect the culture. And Ralph's that kind of guy who does. You know, Ron is that kind of guy who does. But there's a lot of people out there that don't. They, especially in today's world, I mean, again, they just go out, do their thing, and they're done. And then they go and tell the stories.
And so in the context of that, you can hear when I even ask Gunner these questions about driving deer, right? Driving deer is begging for something to go wrong. Begging. Not just asking for it. You're begging for it. Okay? And then the other one. A deer that you don't have a good enough shot and you don't respect it enough to not take the shot, and now you're chasing it, you're following blood trails and things like that.
Yeah, and now it's a wounded animal that's hurt, that's confused. I mean,
the only appropriate, unacceptable. Yeah, the only appropriate end to that is that you find him somehow, and you don't notice him quick enough, and he breaks about 6 of your ribs as he runs you over as you come upon him. And then the same thing for, you know, when you talk and shooting another hunter, you know, it's like I said, I
told you a story about, like, you know, I was hunting one time and a guy shot at me once and I got in position and all I was doing was waiting for him to level the gun at me again. Because I had the perfect hold on center mass of his chest. And he didn't. He went on with this thing. He realized, I don't know what he realized. But I mean, if I could one day get in touch with a guy and realize, do you know how close you came to the end of your life that day? Cause I, you know, you don't, I'm not going to let you make that second mistake.
No, they had no idea. It's just what they do, right?
Yeah.
No idea. Out there having a good time. Oops, sorry, buddy. Didn't see you.
Or the thing that really bothers me when I go out hunting or even onto a range when they start drinking, consuming alcohol, or using drugs, getting high, you know, because I've been out there and I walk away and I get away from that. Can't be any part of that.
It's part of the experience, though, right? I mean... Yeah.
It's not a party.
No, you can do all that stuff, have a great time, and, I mean, look, you got to get up, and you're going to handle firearms, and you're going to go shoot. Here's an email. Mac, Gunner should have shot around right next to that dude's foot, hopefully right between his legs. He's from Minnesota. He should have gone 5-hole on him. Blast some dirt up in his face just to send a message. This could have been...
No, because then the message would have been, I would have been a lousy shot, too. And
I know. Yeah. If you were going to communicate that message effectively, it might take 3 rounds. This guy's either a really bad shot, or he's just toying with me.
Yeah.
Another email.
Go ahead.
Okay, so far we've covered the Gunner has mixed feelings about running for office. He actually sat and watched a movie with subtitles called Life is Beautiful. And we're not really talking about deer hunting. We're talking about stupid things people do while deer hunting. I have a question for the Gunner. Slug or rifle bullet? Does he have a preference? Is there an appropriate time for either?
Yeah, there is. That's a great question, and I like that question because that tells me something about the guy asking the question. I always judge people on the questions they ask me. That's a very intelligent question. So, a rifle bullet in an area where your backdrop, if you do perforate the animal or it goes through the animal, and again, you do miss, where is that round going to fall? How much distance do you have behind that animal? In the great open plains of West Texas, when there's no other people around, that's great. In Minnesota, in an area, because I've hunted when there's houses around or other people's dwellings or other people, shotgun round because of the distance it's going to travel. And you got to be much closer. Rifle or shotgun slug, you got to be much closer to the animal than you can with the rifle. I would look at your surroundings.
What happened? We just lost the prince. And he's back.
All right. Why'd you hang up on me? Why'd you hang up on me?
I didn't hang up. You were actually being articulate for once. Why would I hang up on you?
Oh. Where did I leave off?
I don't know.
Okay, so let me backtrack a little bit. Rifle slug, rifle bullet.
No, right you left off right. You were talking about the slope of the land, right? And the range of the target.
Shotgun, you got to be much closer. You're in a more populated area. There's a chance of people being out there or striking something else that you don't want to strike. It really depends. I would really go towards, if you want to do that, then I'll tell you to go towards a muzzle loader. It's the kind of the best of both worlds. You're getting the slug, but you're not getting the range like a rifle. And it's a little bit harder. You get more drop off of the bullet, aerodynamics, everything else. And, muzzle loaders, a little more difficult to shoot. It's what you're comfortable with. So practice your craft, be good at it. And if you're good at the rifle, then yeah, stick with the rifle. But I would tell you, if you're just starting out, shotgun is the way to go. Go to the bow. Compound and then go to a recurve, bow is going to do, people don't realize how much damage a bow does. I mean, you get a 1-inch broadhead when it's spinning and it's cutting through that animal, it does a lot more damage, to an animal than a rifle bullet ever would. In those cases, it just really depends on what you're comfortable with and what you practice with. But I really like that. I mean, people have asked me that question before, and I always tell them, if it was me starting out hunting, I'd go to the shotgun. Again, price-wise, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You have to be a little bit better hunter because you have to get let up. You get a little closer, and you don't have to worry about where that round's going, because it doesn't go as far.
Right. No, you know what? For all those reasons, I think it makes great sense. And, again, it takes a bit more. You need to be more skilled, And the question, and then I guess the question comes to Mike, what do you go out there for? Simply to shoot a deer or do you go out there for the experience of hunting and being outdoors and in the beautiful, you know, yeah. pick a location around the country, yeah, and all of that.
I've had a lot of antlered animals in my sights, and I just never pulled the trigger because I guess the beauty got to me, like how beautiful this was. You know, really? Like I said, unless you've never been, the sound of elk bugling in, you know, the morning woods and that smell of cedar and the pine up in the high altitudes and that cool air. I mean, there's just that, it's just so beautiful.
Chronicled in the movie, The Deer Hunter, right? Where they're up in the mountains and he takes...
Right? Northern Pennsylvania.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Beautiful
that is.
Right.
The landscape.
Let
me tell you something else too. I've done this, and I don't know who it was. Wasn't my dad. It was probably someone. I was earlier on someone else hunting, but every time I took an animal, I always thanked God for allowing me to have this opportunity, and that, you know, and to thank the animal. Really, what you're doing is, you know, for this, because there's a lot to that. I mean, there's show the respect of, you know, nothing really goes to waste. That's why I don't have a lot. I have one elk mount, you know, in my house. But other than that, all my other animals, I never really mounted because it's not about that. It's not about the ego of, you know, me better than the animal. That was it's a one-on-one experience that you have with the animal. And it's a very private moment. Because, I mean, no matter what you feel, you know, if you're a good hunter, after you dispatch an animal, there's a little bit of sorrow there. You feel connected in some way. You feel, you know, there's a connection. And the guys that I respect it, keep it private. You know, it's a private moment. You took a life. You took a living thing, you know, so it's up to you how you deal with that. But, you know, my suggestion is always you give thanks because, you know, that opportunity to do that and what that animal means, and you do it for the right reason, you know. You don't do it just for the sport of it. Now, I take that, you know, and people say, well, you hunt hogs or varmint. Yeah, I do. Because I understand the damage that they do to other things, you know. And so I step in every once in a while and help cull that herd of the destructive behavior of some types of animals. But when it comes to, like, when we talk about trophy animals, antlered animals, your sheep, your deer, your elk, your bear, those type of things, there's a little bit of difference there.
All right, now, how long, you put Montana Man on probation for a year, right?
Yeah, we can probably revoke that.
Okay, well, he's in a probationary status, and he wrote this. There is no hunting in Texas. High fence and bait feeding, really a joke.
All right, he's back on probation.
He's
on probation again.
He wrote that while he was on probation. Were there any terms of his probation that were suspended, of his sentence that were sentenced? Those should be vacated.
I don't remember.
If anything was suspended.
He violated his parole. Now he's going to go for sentence.
Now, the truth is, high fence and bait feeding, that's gone on all over the country because it's now big business, as you were talking about.
It's huge business, and I agree with them. I'm not a big fan of it, and I hate it. But to say that it doesn't go on in any other state, that's not here just in Texas. You know, yeah, there's probably a bigger proportion of it, but what drives that is I'm sure there's people with big money out of Montana that come down to Texas to shoot, high-fence animals.
Mike, what do you call that kind of hunting? High-fence hunting?
Yeah, high-fence hunting. chain hunting, you know. I call it domesticated animal hunting.
High fence hunting.
It's like going out and shooting your cow, and it's like shooting your cow and being proud of it. Like, okay, whatever. I stocked up on this heifer, and I got probably, you know, 20 feet. Well, yeah, you can walk up and feed it too.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, I'm not a big fan of that. But the type of hunting he does, he's the hunter that I'm trying to describe, the responsible hunter.
Most of the time. No, he grew
up. The times that he tells us.
Yeah, so. No, the stories he tells us, but he's still on probation, so he needs to watch his shit. Another email, Munich. Based upon the Mossad discussion, you may or may not have seen the movie Munich. If not, please do so. It's an excellent flick. You still need to watch.
I did see that. That's a great movie.
You still need to watch Wild River, Gunner 2. Have you seen Wild River?
What's Wild River?
I don't know. I thought it was a place here in Orange County that has water slides.
Oh, that's Wild Rivers.
Oh, with an S?
Yeah.
All right. Munich, Wild River. I just wrote both those down. This is entitled Mountain Man. I love this show on the History Channel called Mountain Man. Shows men trapping, hunting, and really honoring their kill. Some of them actually thank their kill before dressing it. Have you ever seen that show?
What? Which one?
A show on the History Channel called Mountain Man.
No, I don't watch reality TV.
Oh, yeah, they follow these guys. They follow these guys around. Deer Rifles. Hey, Mac, this segment is going down in flames. you thought you were going to hear gun talk, and all you got is sportsman hunting lecture. Hey, you need it, all right? If we thought you were responsible enough to just do gun talk, then the gunner would have simply talked guns. He doesn't. Yeah.
Because I err on the side of I know human behavior, and human behavior is irresponsible.
And human extinction can't get here quick enough, and we cannot shut off the comments section on anything on the internet quick enough, because it is horrible. You know,
two lawn chairs sit on my back patio for that day when the meteor was announced on the radio.
Gonna go outside and watch it.
Think I'm joking. I'll even tell you, I'm going to be wearing shorts, a t-shirt, drinking a bourbon, sitting on that with my chroma glasses, because I can watch it in high color.
You know
all the different colors.
I put the chroma glasses on, and I will tell you this. I was like, these are awesome. Even, I'm not colorblind, but I'll tell you what, everything. And then it was like, then I wondered, like, well, what does it really look like? Does it look like the glasses make it look, or does it look like my eyes? Because it looked way better in Mike's glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So vivid.
Crazy, crazy vivid. And, like, I can, you know, it made me think of, actually we were pulling out down his driveway when he handed them to me, but it made me think of your experience going from gray or whatever you see to that, as opposed to mine was a marginal experience. Your experience much different than mine. Made me think of, appreciate it a little bit. Mac, I'd be curious. In your first hour, you were talking about an article that appeared in Marine Corps Times. I'd be curious about the gunner's thoughts about that. All right, final question for you today. There's a commentary written in Marine Corps Times today. It says, does got your six only pertain to men in the ranks? ? And it's written by Marine Sergeant Iwakuni Japan. First of all, what the article says is this August, we celebrate 100 years of women in the Marine Corps, and there's an article in the New York Times about First Lieutenant Marina Hurl, who's with 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. And immediately when those articles about her appear, all the derogatory comments appear underneath the column. And so then the conclusion is the Marine Corps is not doing enough. Based on reading those comments, there's more the Marine Corps needs to do, blah, 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 blah. And I have an issue because, first of all, if you won't sign your name to it, to me, I'm not sure I understand that. I'm not sure I understand publishing something that doesn't have a name on it. And then also, if you're going to judge humanity by the comment section of any article of any internet website or publication, go ahead and schedule the meteor for this afternoon, okay? Because, again, can't get here quick enough. So those essentially were my comments. Your thoughts on I've Got Your Six, the Marine Corps doing enough for women, blah, 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 blah.
No. I mean, I don't follow it too closely enough to actually have an educated discussion on it.
All
right. It doesn't bother me.
All right. We'll leave
I'm not connected like that. I don't have skin in the game. I'm not the pig anymore, right?
I'm not the pig. You're the chick. You're the chicken. All right. Because the pig's committed to breakfast, the chicken's involved. There you have it. All right. What's on the agenda for the rest of the day? Contemplate a life in politics?
No, I'm going to go meet lunch. I'm going to go have lunch today. Then I got some errands to run. And then what else? And then I think that's it. Then tonight I'm rolling around with Granbury Police stuff.
Nice.
No.
We love that. We'll get a report on Thursday. All right. Anything else we should know? I think you should consider running for politics if you can subordinate your own emotions to your desire to do great things. And I think that I wasn't ready for it. If I ever ran again, I would be better mentally prepared. Better mentally prepared for it. And
yeah.
I would understand that, you know, that when you put your hat into that ring, you should expect that. But the upside of all that you can do to help people vastly outweighs the idiots that you have to deal with on probably an ongoing basis. And so if you can get to that place, run.
Yeah, I will see. I got to work on that.
Mike Musselman.
Got to work on. I know I
got to
work on.
Mike Musselman
I'm already half about it.
Texas.
But see, I'm happy that I got you talking about
State
the mass extinction. That you're starting to believe in it, too.
Oh, my. Look, if you read the comments under anything published, it only affirms what you say. It's the stupidest stuff you've ever seen. You know, in your life. And it comes with predictability. And so if that's how you're going to judge the Marine Corps, come on, man. It's like, as you and I have talked, it's like judging the nation based on the 5 o'clock news. It's the Jerry Springer show. It's not our country. That's for damn sure. So, anyway. All right. That'll do it. Have a good one.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
There he is. Michael Musselman. Civilian. Oh, it's Wind River. It's Wind River, not Wild River. Oops. That's one letter, man. One letter. Sorry about that. The movie is called Wind River, not Wild River. I just got this. I fantasize about taking my boy on a wild hog hunt. Not interested in shooting hogs inside of a fence, but rather those in the wild. What does the gunner suggest? Can it be done without the dogs? I will highlight this. I'll put a star next to it, and I'll save it for Thursday when Mike comes back. If you just joined the program, don't touch that dial, okay? Because today's show is really a good show. And I listen to this show every day. So I say that with all sincerity. First hour, we check news headlines. And then we go ahead and listen to John McCain. We listen to the first thing that Americans heard when they heard of John McCain. And that was a statement he made that was filmed by his captors in Vietnam, describing him being shot down and the humane treatment he received. So you'll hear that. So that was John McCain's arrival on the American landscape, the national landscape, if you will. Then you'll hear the final thing that he said to his constituents the last time he spoke on the floor of the United States Senate. And I would tell you that pretty amazing little piece of audio. And what blows me away, and I said it in the first hour, is his argument is for regular order, that things come out of committees that are bipartisan, that can garner support from both sides of the aisle, that these attempts to go around regular order, to fashion these things and somehow or other coerce one or two people to vote for them, suspending the Senate's normal rules, are stupid. And that there are arcane rules to include their system of cloture are designed so that progress in the country happens incrementally. He defends that system. I don't like it. Anyway, but his comments are spot on. You'll hear his final speech, which I think is a great speech. And you can hear the passion at certain times of the speech in his voice when he's talking about certain things. Then you'll hear a letter written by Senator McCain. His last communication with the American people read yesterday by his former campaign manager. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. And then let me just tell you, an awesome interview done with Susie Landolfi. She's one of the path guides. She's a senior path guide at Boulder Crest Retreat. And so you'll hear how they use horses in therapy, why horses are significant and not just any animal. And so you'll get to hear her thoughts on this. But more importantly, I've gotten smarter in terms of interviewing people, and I've learned. You'll hear her talk about military people don't need to go to therapy. Okay, they've trained all their lives for different missions. This is just going to be a different set of training. Okay. Designed for you to handle another challenge that's going to be placed in front of you. Okay? So it's not therapy, it's training. There's nothing wrong with you. You are normal for being a member of the warrior tribe. She explains the Boulder Crest Retreat formula, which is you have to get qualified to go. And one of the things you can't be an alcoholic, you can't be on drugs. So the things we talk about, Boulder Crest does. Kind of interesting. So you get pre-qualified, you go there for a week, and you know, you're guided through their training. Okay, that training is designed for you to take with you to create life practices, okay, so that you can deal with a new challenge in your life. Makes sense, right? Right? We want you to learn how to call an aircraft. What do we make you? We send you to FAC training. All right? So the same thing that we've done in other parts of our lives. So in that training, you become part of a team, your fire team. And then there's different assignments that you and your fire team will complete for the next 18 months. You'll stay connected. And we all know how important that is. You'll create practices that you'll need to live the rest of your life. Pretty interesting. Awesome interview, so you'll hear that as well. And then you'll hear the gunner initially talking about disgust, then running for office, disgust over politics, running for office, and then gun talk. In that order. So don't be put off when you don't hear gun talk right away. So, great show today. Thanks for listening. And I'll leave you with this thought that I got during the interview today with Susie Landolfi. I quote Sebastian Younger, who wrote a book called Tribes. He's an award-winning writer, documentarian, all kinds of stuff. Restrepo, that's all Younger, right? I say to him, they don't want us, the larger population. They don't want us. That's why we form our own subgroup. His response, they need you. Okay? That the general population needs veterans. And I would tack on to that this. And we need them to continue to live our purpose-driven life. I think that's pretty important. That as you retrain yourself to deal with the challenges in terms of mental health that will be in front of you for the rest of your life, you will then be able to help other people. And that's exactly what leaders do. That's exactly what purpose-driven people do. And that's how it makes sense to us. Cool stuff. Have a great day. On a Tuesday, Almarine Radio, over and out. Colby Volke on tomorrow, going to talk about Haditha. Lead active duty defense lawyer in the Haditha case. Going to be interesting. Have a good one.